OPN Ask an Angel podcasts are conversations with global angel investors and venture capitalists. We explore how to invest, understanding investment strategies and approaches to due diligence. Join us and learn what it takes to be a startup or what it takes to invest in the next great company.
Welcome to Supporters Fund, Ask an Investor. I'm your host, Jeffrey Poffin. Let's please welcome Jordi Ferreira, Investment Director at Ship2B Ventures, as our investor for today. Welcome, Jordi. It's a real pleasure having you join us.
Hi, Jeffrey. It's my pleasure being here.
Well, you know, I'm very excited to have this discussion with you today, and I'm sure there's a million reasons, but if I define it down to two things, one, you're an ex-founder that sold their company, and two, you're heavy into sales, and you're also on a lot of boards. So maybe that's three things. So there's a lot of cool things that come out of this because there's a lot of good information that founders and other investors can learn from. So we're excited to jump into this. And the way we like to kind of start our show off with is we want you to share a little bit about your background so you can dive all the way back to your Deloitte, your Deutsche Bank days, all the way through to everything you're doing today. And then one thing about you that nobody would know.
Okay, good. So, I'll try to be humble a bit about it. I think there's a lot to learn. I'm always feel like I'm kind of in the beginning of something much, much bigger. But just to start about me, I'm an economist by training. Then I did an MBA and I ended up doing a course about value-based healthcare at HBS. I started my professional career as a financial consultant. I did do an internship at Deutsche Bank, but my main experience was 4 years at Deloitte in the transaction advisory services and the M&A departments, which was good. Analytically, I think I'm strong and I was comfortable with it, but I needed some extra action. So I found by chance an opportunity within the pharma industry in corporate development in a Spanish pharma company. Which got me into the life science sector. Was an outstanding experience. I got to meet outstanding people, outstanding researchers, and I ended up in a spin-off from that company, managing the also corporate development, but also especially managing the relationships with the US. We were able to create a joint venture with a US company there. We were able to raise the company from zero sales to 5 million sales and ultimately selling it to a large Japanese group. Then I moved into my next venture. I joined an IVD company, an in vitro diagnostics company in Italy. So I was able to move to Italy and basically doing the same business development, corporate development. That moved me to headquarters of that same company working in Boston, which to me was a life-changing experience in my life, because I got to get very much in touch with what we call digital therapeutics or digital health. I did my course in value-based healthcare there too, and I tried to start my own thing there too. So it was a CBT, a cognitive behavioral therapy for type 2 pre-diabetic patients, which was an outstanding experience. I started together with a partner. Unfortunately, it didn't fly through. What I have done though in parallel is I've always had my side businesses. When I was actually at Deloitte, out of a deal that we made, I was able to open a couple of franchises of a chocolate brand, which was an interesting experience. I owned that business for 3 years and I was able to sell it afterwards, which was also a really good experience, you know, maybe not as a full-time entrepreneur, but as an investor. It felt great. First of all, generating the business and generating the added value. And then of course, after the sale, generating the value for me was very rewarding. With that, I was also able to invest in a small hotel in Lisbon. as a partner or together with three other people. So I was owning 25% of it. And I just, which I just got out actually a couple of months ago. So it has been also a really, really, really good experience. And I think based on my curiosity and my passion for healthcare and value-based healthcare, I just knew that I wanted to become a professional investor, not doing it on the side and not doing it in things that might not add real value to the society, but I wanted to be a real professional investor in life sciences and potentially in digital health. So with my family and I, my wife and I, we moved back to Barcelona after living abroad for a few years. And I was very lucky to meet the partners of Ship2B Ventures, which is the fund I'm currently working at. They were looking for someone in their healthcare vertical. And the way they were looking at it and the impact they wanted to provide was 100% aligned with the vision I had with value-based healthcare. So so far I've been now a year and a half with Ship2B Ventures, but it's been an outstanding experience. We've already invested in six early stage companies, and we are seeing a very, very good horizon in front of us.
That's an amazing story and so much insight shared there just along the startup line and being able to jump in and build your own company. And I like the side hustles that turned into exits as well. So that's obviously very well done and exciting to be able to share that as well.
Absolutely. I mean, happy to, you know, if you want me to speak more about any of these experiences, I'm happy to expand.
Oh, for sure. We're going to dive back into that. So you mentioned earlier on that when you started to work and you were working as an analyst back in the Deloitte days, can you share a little bit about kind of the experience you had? Like, because I know that a lot of people start off when they leave school, they start off as consultants and they usually do jump into the big conglomerates. And when you're working on M&A, I think it just gives you a totally different perspective of how businesses operate. It's more financial based. It's going through, plowing through the numbers and understanding what they're trying to do, what they've achieved, what's good, what's bad. Is there some kind of signs that you've carried forward to today that you share with founders when you're working with them? Because I think that that would be very crucial insight to know, like, hey, if you're going to get your company acquired, you know, pay attention to these things early on, because when I get in there and start ripping apart your business, like we do at Deloitte, you really have to have these things lined up.
This is a great question. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to answer it completely. So I did start at Deloitte because it was, you know, the good thing to do, or you know, the best thing for my CV as a you know, as a fresh graduate from university. I did want this financial experience, but I what really surprised me is the amount of information you can get about the real business just looking at the numbers. I mean, you can really understand many, many things of a company, many, many things that not even a you know, a founder or a manager would be able to tell you. So the advice I would give to founders is keep your numbers very, very to date, and be very aware of how you, when you activate something or when you, whatever you are doing in your business, make sure that it reflects correctly in your numbers. Because when you are going to be raising money or selling the company or in an M&A, people that are going to be looking at the deal, are the first thing that they are going to do is looking at your numbers, and they have to be self-explanatory. That would be, then of course, I mean, you can if you are a company that is very working capital intensive, then be careful with your inventories, be careful with your payables, with your receivables. If you're a software company, so be careful with how you activate sales. I mean, there are other details depending on the sector, but basically what my main advice is make sure that your numbers are where they should be.
And I like the way that you said it should be reflected right away. I think it's pretty crucial. And sometimes, and maybe more than sometimes, I think it's quite often, businesses tend to be feared of numbers. And I'm sure this is baked in from when we're kids, but it seems to be the biggest fear. So what do you recommend, especially early on? Founders tend to avoid this, but not also avoid it, misunderstand it, not understand a few of the key things like cash flow, what that actually means, and we'll dive into that. But what do you see as a way to offset this, especially with the cost? Because the cost of having this part-time CFO or controller, how do you see them getting around that? And is there a way around that at this early stage?
You really got into the point. So when it's early stage, usually founders are either afraid or they don't see it important, or they just don't know and they don't want to deal with it because they don't see it, they have other things to do. Then they end up with, accountants or part-time CFOs or these external people that are not aligned with the objectives of the company. They don't necessarily understand the business. They don't necessarily speak to the founders much, and they end up messing around with it. There's not a simple way of fixing it, but again, it's about the founders making sure they have time to look at the numbers and they spend some time with their accountants or with their CFO or whoever is looking at the numbers, so they can make sure that everything is in place. Why not every now and then having someone external from the company look at the numbers and asking questions? Why not?
I love it. And I noticed that in your background, you've done a lot of extracurricular learnings, like not only your MBA and your BA, and you've done other things as well to learn. So do you think this kind of fits into that same spectrum, that if you don't know numbers, you're not understanding certain things, then maybe just spend weekends doing a course to ramp yourself up on how all of this can work so that you're stronger at this suit? And yeah, you might not be able to work on your business 24/7, 7 days a week, but maybe take some time for the next 4 months and just work on learning Excel, whatever it might be. But do you think, just based off your own experiences and what you've done to get to where you are today, do you think it's valuable for these founders to look at the same thing?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm impressed of the information you can get out of my CV. Indeed, I'm a strong believer of continuous education, and I'm constantly evaluating myself, trying to understand what is my next step and what am I missing, what skills am I missing, and I'm always trying to complement my training. Actually, in fact, I'm just doing an evaluation course right now, and I've been doing evaluation for many years, but still, I want to refresh some stuff and I want to get things I want to have things on top of my mind. Definitely, whatever. So something that I value a lot in founders is their humbleness and their flexibility and their ability to know what they don't know and where they need help. So it's having this humble approach and understanding that you can always learn more and know better is very important, and this will be reflected in the finance, in the numbers, but it will also be reflected in understanding their sector, understanding how to build a team. How to build a team is extremely important, and there are many people, advisors outside, who could also help them. So yes, definitely taking extra time to get step back from the day-to-day business and then understand how can they improve their skills is crucial.
No, I totally agree with that. And I think in time, you have to get the founder to wrap their head around mentoring, coaching. They probably think that their plate's full of all of these things and obstacles that are preventing them from building, raising funds, all these things that are in their way. But those little things are actually really important to building that great next founder. And to your point, you're always educating yourself and taking new courses, even though you're doing it and you've been doing this skill, you can still add on to that skill. There's always things that you may not have looked at or you did remember from your earlier days, but they don't come through in your work because it's not triggered. And then you take this course and then boom, you're like, oh, I need to add that section in. And now you've got that checklist and you start doing it again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
I love it. So now you kind of take a little bit of a step forward and you jumped into creating these licenses or creating these new businesses, and you've jumped right into these, which I think is really exciting. Did you raise funds? How did that kind of work? And did you need to raise funds? And what was the process behind it? And then maybe you can talk a little bit about the exit, because one, it was really quick. You know, I saw that you went from what, year one to year three, and then you were done. It was 3.5 years. But what was the what drove you to exit? Because you could have gone forever, and maybe this could have been a 10-year, 30x exit. What was the impetus to change? And did you just look at it and say, you know what, I'm ready. I'm going to move to that next stage of my career, which it sounds like you've programmatically made sure that each thing was step by step, and this just fit into that step. And you're like, nope, I'm done. I don't need any more. I can go on to the next thing. Maybe explain a little bit about that, because again, from a founder's mindset, this is very interesting, because not a lot of people step out of their own business that quickly. They all think it's unicorn world, and you chose a different path. So I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah, so my approach was completely different, and it has probably something to do with why I ended up being an investor and not a founder, because I consider myself very entrepreneur minded, but I probably don't have the courage or the right idea or the right team to do it. And this is exactly what happened with this chocolate franchises I was involved with. So I always so I got this idea out of a deal that we were analyzing and at Deloitte, actually. And I got to know about the franchise business, how it was moving, the key metrics, so on and so forth. And I realized that with a little investment, some franchises were able to give nice returns. But I never considered stepping in full time, never. So I put some of my savings. I got a lot of debt, very luckily. I was able to get a good loan, actually, and very in reasonably good conditions. And given my age and the fact that we were in the post, depression years. And I jumped into it. It was an outstanding experience. I also was very, very busy with it. So I was with my full-time job that was very demanding. And I was having this, basically I was looking at the numbers at night, or, I was going to the two shops that I had during the weekends. Why did I end up? Because as you said, there was a next step for me. So it was time to do my MBA, and I couldn't do too many things at the time. So I approached a couple of, some contacts that I had that I knew that they were into retail. I was able to get an offer relatively fast, and within 6 months I was able to get out and think about the next thing.
I love it. So when you made that step to go out, what was the two or three things that you would take from that experience? Was it go in high and aggressive? Was it go in low and build up? Or was it just make sure that you can show the value, show the numbers, let people understand the business, let them come to the table with an offer, and just know in your mind what you want and then go after it? Like, what was some of the things that you could share about how that worked for you?
Yeah, so for me, again, numbers were everything. So I had my numbers done, I had my Excel sheets, my analysis very organized. And for me, it was about sharing the business, having people come to the shops and, meeting the people and then showing them the financials behind it, and just show them that the numbers work. And for me, it was more about, so my project was not, I didn't want to go unicorn or whatever. I just want to educate myself. I wanted to have this experience. So my expectations in terms of economic returns were not out of the market. So I did my analysis too of, where are the multiples now so far and what would be a reasonable price. I was just worried about not selling too cheap, but I was not worried of, selling at the best possible price. So, and also I was worried about who would buy the company because I wanted the person to care about the people in there. So with all these things in mind, I think it was a good deal for me. I had a nice return and you know, the people were able to continue doing their normal jobs.
So it sounds like no matter what you were doing, when you put this process together, you analyzed the numbers, you put a value that you were looking for that you kind of expected, and then you had a couple of real key KPIs that you wanted to make sure that they were met. And one of them being that you wanted the business to be taken care of and the people that worked for it. So you had a really good scope on why and what you had that you wanted out of it, but you made it very transactional. And I think that that's where there's a big difference here that I find where in a lot of the M&A projects that we're part of is that there's usually a lot of emotion driven to it. Even in a house sale, I want it to go here and it better go to a young family. Like, and then they kind of block the value or the opportunities that come up because they have their mind so locked into maybe this really small area of a sale versus being broad and looking at this as a transaction, but making sure that the other elements are being met. How did you kind of get yourself to put your mindset into that? Is it, again, it comes down to the numbers, or was it something that you learned from a mentor? Like, what kind of puts you in this stage that, you know what, this is a transaction, I have to keep it like this?
So in my mind, I had to do it. It was, you know, that phase, that learning was already with me and I didn't need it anymore. I wanted to start my MBA. I knew I wanted to start my MBA without worrying about the business. I knew for sure it was never going to happen for me to step on that business full time. I didn't want to have more franchises because of scalability. It wasn't, you know, maybe not the best thing. And, you know, I wasn't sentimentally attached to the business. I was very proud of it. I was very proud of getting to that point, but I was also very determined with the fact that that phase had to end and I had to start the next one. So maybe that helped. Yeah, I don't know. I had never looked at it this way.
Well, I think you just defined it. It was the learning was done with it. Like, you got to the stage where you were finished with what your intentions were. And I think that, again, makes a big difference. You can carry a business for 10, 20, 30 years, make the money, lose your drive, lose your ability to do other things because you lost the desire because you were just printing money or you were just doing the value. But you lost your entrepreneurial drive because you just accepted your fate instead of saying, you know, I'm done. I've learned what I needed to learn in this instance, and I'm going to move forward now. So I love that because I think that is the same thing when a company comes and looks for funding. They don't look at it as I'm venture and you mentioned this, it's not scalable. So you knew it wasn't scalable. So it's not like you were trying to make it scalable and forcing the square peg into a circle hole or whatever the saying is, but you really focused on what the outcome was, is that I hit the duration of my learning. I can now move forward and get on to my next stage. And it's very programmatic, but it makes sense. And how I think in time, maybe founders will start to see this and say, okay, my business isn't scalable, but it is making money. I can do this. And then when I get to the point where I'm done my learning, I can move on and not feel super attached or feel like I'm ruining something because somebody else can pick that up and make it better and you can go on to your next steps.
Absolutely. And actually, it is the way I see it. And I had no idea what I would do next with that earnings. But few months later, I had this opportunity in Lisbon with this, building that some friends were to acquire. And, you know, it happened that I had cash at the moment. And, and there are always other things when that can come. And this is what happened with me. So I ended up that phase. I started my MBA. And then a few months after, so an opportunity came to me that perfectly fit my that phase of my life, which was I was learning also in my MBA, also very focused in professional full-time career, and I had the opportunity of investing in a building that would become a hotel. It was nice. Hospitality is always it's always nice. Real estate is safe, and you know, this could give me some regular returns without me being very, very involved. So I decided to take that opportunity too. Yeah.
I love it. No, it's a great story and a lot of learning there. I think that there's a lot of value that comes out of that process and the way that you looked at it. And even today with the building, opportunities come. So I don't think people should have that fear that if I sell my company, I'm going to be lost and I don't know what I'm going to do and I don't know what startup I'm going to work on. More and more opportunities will keep coming to you, especially after it's known that you did move out of something and you continue to work forward. You were working on your MBA. A lot of great things are going to come as long as you keep moving forward, learning and going on to the next thing. So I think it's awesome and it shares really well. So now we'll kind of jump into your position on kind of where you guys are today. And now that you've taken this full leap into the investment world, and you mentioned that you're like on the bioscience side, that you're really into this space, and this is what kind of drove you into what you are today. What are some of the types of things that you guys are seeing? What's interesting you the most about the space? And where do you kind of see it going in the next few years?
Yeah, as I said, I'm in the investment side in the healthcare investment, but we are an impact venture capital fund. So we invest in finding solutions for vulnerable communities, and I love it because it has again this financial component. So we have to provide returns to our investors for sure. But we can only invest when there is when we identify a company that has intentionality from their founders, additionality to solve a real problem, and then we measure the actual outcomes of that company that we're investing in, and I love it. Again, it's very much aligned with value-based healthcare, which is a concept of switching from process-based payment or incentive to outcome-based healthcare. And I really love it. What I'm seeing is that everyone now, many mainstream players are now wanting to explore impact funds or impact investment. It's not that straightforward. And what I love from what we're doing is that I can really see that we are pioneers. We are exploring the field. We are creating the framework of what is impact investing, and I really love it. I mean, we're really doing exciting things.
I like that. And when you guys put together this, I guess overall thesis of going after the impact side, ESG. There's lots of different terms that are kind of defining it now. And I think the market's really shifted a lot in this, right? So now you've got oil sectors that are taking a beating. They're not happy with the fact that dollars aren't flowing back in their way, even though they're making a lot of money and et cetera. Like, so there's concerns that are building up on all fronts. There's been a huge pushback with the US government against ESG companies because they're saying, yeah, you think you're ESG, but when you dive into it, there's limited, if any, ESG-based structure. So maybe can you define on when you mentioned that you guys obviously dive into what this looks like, what does that look like when you're doing that analysis and what that return is? Because I think that would be helpful for founders to really understand that. And maybe you can touch on what the ESG side really stands for. I know obviously the environmental, social, and governance, but to us, it's probably something we can dive into every second of the day, but to everybody out there, there's obviously different ways of defining what that looks like.
It's a very good question. And we have this conversation, I would say on a weekly basis here at Ship2B. Common conclusions that we get in with this subject is that there are two things. And one thing is the purpose of a company, why and what the company does, and how the company does it, right? And we have two separate words or two separate ways of looking at it. So the purpose for us is impact investing. And by purpose, I mean, I want to solve, you know, cancer, or I want to reduce CO2emissions. So this is the purpose of the company, and it has clearly a social purpose for, you know, towards building a better world. On the other hand, you have how you do things, you know, and you can be doing, you can have a, maybe an impact business, or you can have, you know, a random whatever, you know, a chocolate shop, you know, which is not necessarily an impact business, but you might be doing things the right way. So you might be being very efficient with your waste management. You might be taking care of the wage gap or the gender gap in a certain management or senior positions. You might be, so you might be taking into account all these ESG variables or KPIs that, regardless whether you are an impact business or not, you know, you are helping to create a better society. So when I talk about the how, or at least at C2B, when we speak about the how we do things, we refer to ESG. And we have it as very, very separate things. In fact, we only invest in impact. So our driver for investment is the purpose of the company rather than the ESG. But we ask all our portfolio companies to have ESG indicators on them, so they can report and they can be transparent about their social KPIs and their emissions. I don't know if that answers the question.
It does. No, that makes sense. So you take the ESG as a component, or as the underlying component on how you're going to support the companies, but really your investment comes from the impact. What is it doing for the world? What is it doing for society? And at the end, when you're reporting it back, you do want to know that it is bringing some form of ESG into the market, which is obviously the social impact, the governance, to ensure that the company is going in the right direction versus just in this to make gobs of money and ruin the earth and cut down every tree possible, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly. And yeah. And then I understand why people are so skeptic with this, and there's so much criticism towards the ESG, because I understand that there are some companies that might be ruining the world, as you just said, but they might be, you know, doing some ESG related things. So one thing is not replacing the other. They can be complementary, but you just have to make sure that whether, if you want to really improve the world, that you're the purpose of the fund that you're investing in, or the company you're investing in, is impact related, because ESG is nonsense per se, you know, without the context.
Agreed. Well shared. I agree. That's a good way to look at it. And I think a lot of startups are looking at it that way as well. Like, we'll hit the requirements on what this means, but really we're an impact company and this is what we're trying to achieve. So I think that's well shared. We're going to kind of move on a little bit more into kind of the next segment. And so there's a couple of questions before we get into my new favorite part, which is the 60-second rant. So the first question is, you know, throughout the journey and through all the things that you've done, what's the toughest lesson that you've learned to date as an investor?
Good question. The toughest lesson is that everyone is human. And everyone can make mistakes, you know, and even the best or the ones with best reputation can be, you know, can be wrong. And that you can trust in yourself, your own analysis. And yeah.
No, well shared. Very true. You know, you can do all the metrics, do all the numbers, but at the end of the day, you're investing in people, teams, and there's mistakes that are made along the way. It's how well you communicated back and how well other people are able to jump in and help out if they do please at that point. So I do agree. That's a it's a good learning. Very good learning.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Okay. So we talked a bit earlier about, you know, a case study that really would emphasize what it takes to be an entrepreneur. And throughout your journey, it can be referenced to something you've done or companies that you've worked with. But can you share like a real story that kind of gives you an idea of what it takes to be an entrepreneur? It's not the easy glory Tesla type founder stuff, but is there and that wasn't an easy story either, but is there something that really helped you define what it takes to be an entrepreneur?
Yeah, so I think to be an entrepreneur, it takes of course curiosity, expertise in a specific field, humbleness for sure, and being open to explore or to change your mind or to accept that you have been wrong. I think we have an outstanding founder in one of the companies in our portfolio, who to me represents all these values perfectly, and he's doing outstandingly well. So first of all, he's a very good person. So he always has time for everyone. He always will have a good word for everyone. He will, you know, answer or receive whoever wants to talk to him. He's someone with 12 years experience before jumping into the business he jumped. So he was very knowledgeable about his sector and understood very well the needs. He wanted to create a better world. I think this is important. So he had this purpose, you know. He was at a top position at a very good firm, like top firm in his sector, and still he wanted to do things better, and he started on the side, which I think is also very clever for him. He's actually a friend of him, and his father started for him. And when he got very, very little traction, but some traction, just then he jumped full time. You know, he paid back his father a little bit. He paid back his friend a little bit, you know, and he started at all. And then when he jumped in, his execution has been so far incredible. So he's very results oriented. Understands very well what investors want to see, what, of course, he knows very well all his stakeholders, not only his customers, but he understands very well how his you know, providers work, and how potential competition, he's in kind of a niche space, but his potential competitors, why wouldn't they enter, and he's he has already set some barriers for potential competitors, and he's I would say he's extremely focused. So his experience, he's humble, he's focused, and he's ambitious. I would say he wants to grow it, not only for the money, but also for the, because he's he believes he's doing something good for society.
I love it. Well shared. Those are some great points. I'm trying to keep up and write as many things as I can down, but that was very, very, very good. Okay, we're gonna jump into the 60-second rant. All right, the way this works is you can talk about any subject, anything that you would like, and it has to be 60 seconds. I'm going to time it, and it's a rant. So really what you're doing is you're just going down and you're hammering through what you like or dislike about something that you want to get off your chest. And that's really what it's all about. It's the 60-second rant.
Okay, so just tell me when to start, and I'll start.
All right, give me 1 second. And then when you're done, I'm going to rebuttal with one line, hopefully. And then you can finish it off right after that. So here we go. And I'll put my hand up to let you know that you've got 5 seconds left. All right. You're good to go.
Thanks. So I'm fed up with mainstream investors wanting to or pretending to be impact investors. So there's clearly a big wave, a lot of money put in this sector, ESG impact. And there are small young players such as us who have, you know, who are born in order to fill this gap. And we are seeing really sharks, huge funds, huge companies that are now claiming that they care about impact. Last week, I was just speaking to one of them. They were briefing me their thesis of their new fund. And it was exactly the same of the previous one. I was like, man, how can this be impact? You know, if it's exactly the same as the last one. So I would love to see some, you know, from regulatory bodies or from, you know, governments or whoever, you know, some kind of structure to differentiate what is opportunism from what is impact. And same thing with done. Okay.
Oh, that was good. That was good. So I'm going to say, to rebuttal against this, there are a lot of changes that have happened in the last few years around impact investing. You've had the largest fund in the world come out and say, people start to change their cap tables, people need to start changing their business models, and they need to start impacting different. It was a 2020 I believe it was the year, came out with the letter. The name is totally eluding me, the gentleman that wrote it, but the largest, one of the largest funds, and said companies need to start changing. And that got everybody spooked. It didn't change a lot, but it got people spooked. And then carbon credits and everything else came out. Does it matter how this approach works? Sorry, does it matter how the approach was, as long as people are making investments, as long as they're going in and doing this? Does it matter? Or is it causing too much noise in the market and it's affecting the players that actually want to invest the right way, which is like yourselves?
I think it's causing a little bit of noise. So it's good that everyone has ESG in mind and everyone is accepting that you will either invest somehow ESG related or we won't be able to invest at all. But it's also creating some noise because it's creating opportunism and people who are not willing to, again, to measure the results, are pretending to claim impact in their firm. So as long as we don't have a specific consensus in how to report and quantify the impact, there will be a lot of bullshit.
I love it. That's a great rant, because to summarize what you shared is that because ESG is the most popular thing right now, everybody's saying that they're ESG, but if you were taking the regulations or to regulate this, they wouldn't be. And they're taking money out of your fund or the ability for your fund and other funds to get real money because you're doing the proper impact investing, and others are just claiming the name and investing the way they have been. So I love it. Great rant. I will add one other thing, because we talked about this real quickly. The US government, they had just passed in this, I think it was in the Senate, to allow for I'm having a brain fart right now on the name of it. On retirement funds managers, so that they do not have to have ESG as a way for them to invest. And Biden said he's going to void it. So, and it'll be the first time he has voided something, because the Senate also realizes that you can't just force everybody to invest one way and only one way. It has to keep the markets open. So to your point, get rid of the noise, clean this up, and let it stop being the Wild West and let it be done properly.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well said. I think I'm just going to do a show just on rants. This is great, man. I love this. I love it. All right. We got to go quick. We're going to whip through our questions. These are on the business side. So you're coming in obviously as the investor, pick one or the other, and we'll rip through some of these and we'll get into some other questions, but we're going to start it off. Founder or co-founder?
Founder.
Unicorn or a 4-year 10x exit?
4-year 10x exit.
Tech or CPG?
I don't know what you mean. I'm sorry.
Tech or CPG? Which one do you like best? Tech or CPG? Like, if you're going to invest, which one do you take?
Tech.
NFTs or Web 3.0?
None of them. Maybe Web 3.0. I don't know. But
okay. AI or blockchain?
AI.
First time founder or a second, third time founder?
Doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter.
Okay. First the money in or
the better. But
okay. First money in or Series A?
Good question. Financially speaking, Series A.
Okay. Angel or VC?
VC.
Board seat or observer?
Board seat.
Safe or convertible note?
Convertible note, but because I'm not too familiar with safe yet.
Okay. Lead or follow?
Lead.
Favorite part of investing?
Closing the deal.
I love it. Number of companies invested per year?
5.
Verticals of focus for you and then general for your business?
I'm focused in one, healthcare, which is actually divided into 3, and our fund is focused in 3 verticals.
Okay. Two qualities a startup needs in order to stand out to you.
Great team, great traction.
What is the piece of advice you give to founders today, 9 out of 10 times?
Focus on their metrics. Don't want to expand when it's too early. Focus on building a good product and identifying a good product market fit. Especially I'm from Spain, I'm hearing all the time, entrepreneurs want to internationalize their companies when they are not even, a relevant player in Spain. So focus and, become important, and then, we'll talk about growing.
Okay. Do you have a philosophy or rules that you stand behind?
Humbleness, being transparent, integrity, generosity, trying to be a good person, basically. I think it pays off.
I like the transparent one. They all are good points, especially the transparent side.
Thanks.
What tech will define the world for you in the next 5 years?
I think we're going to see something. I mean, AI is about to explode.
Yes. Love it. Who is your hero or mentor? And why?
My wife. Because she's always there. Because, she believes in me. She supports whatever, state of mind I am. She's there. Besides this, I intentionally didn't want to say no one famous. Because no one has created their story alone. There's always, even the best, biggest names, they have had a team of outstanding people helping them. So
I love it. No, that's very well thought out. Great answer. They're the yin to your yang and vice versa. So I guess they're the opposite of your risk. And probably the risk at certain times too. So well shared. Okay, three random questions. Well, they're not really random because I've written them down, but they feel random because they'll be random when they come out. So what is the most important technology built by humans today and will be in the future?
Telecommunications. Internet, but it's a it's a consequence of it. Telephone, it's connecting the world, and it will continue to be.
I like it. If you were to change one thing about venture, what would it be?
I don't know. If I could change one thing, I would somehow make it less painful for the founders, and I don't know how.
I was having that discussion actually on text this morning, with a founder's investor out of Singapore, saying the same thing. So there you go.
If you found a solution, please share it with me.
I actually wrote a novel. I turned it into an article. I don't know if I ever posted, but I like to write things and then just put them into a folder and never do anything with them. But yeah, no, I was very, very keen to share. Maybe I will, but it was. It is interesting. For the seconds of what the outcome was, is that I don't believe it's just on venture that needs to change. I think it's also on the founders that need to change. And you mentioned the big one, which is transparency. I think that once you create a different level of transparency, I think you create a different level of investor, because the investor is protecting themselves the entire time as best as they can, because they don't want to lose everything that they're giving. And the founder, on the other hand, is using everything that they're taking, and they're supposed to be producing an outcome. So if they're not transparent, there's obviously an indifference between the giving and taking. And when you're the taker, it's a whole different ballgame. So how can you beat up on the investor for trying to protect themselves? They're not the ones taking, they're the ones giving. So there is a fine balance on how you analyze it. But I wrote an article, but again, I wasn't going to post because I didn't know if it was the wrong angle, but I look at the solution on
everything. I really like it. I mean, I think you should publish it. It's a very interesting perspective.
Well, maybe that's the motivation. It'll come out in a couple of years. That's how terrible I am at doing that. But anyways, last question. What is your biggest fear or phobia in the business startup ecosystem?
Failing, and it shouldn't be. No one wants to fail. Everyone wants to give have the best startup or provide the best returns to their investors. And venture is extremely resource oriented. So either you perform or you're out.
I like it. All right, we'll go to the personal side. Most famous person that pops in your mind?
Messi, soccer player.
I love it. He's great. First brand that pops into your mind?
Nike.
Book or movie?
Excuse me?
Book or a movie? Which one do you choose better?
Movie.
Superman or Batman?
Batman, probably.
Fortune cookie or birthday cake?
Birthday cake.
5 minutes with Bezos or Oprah?
Both.
Mountain or beach? Probably.
Bezos. Beach, definitely.
Bike or run?
Bike.
Big Mac or Chicken McNuggets?
None.
Beer or wine?
Beer.
TED Talk or book reading?
Book reading.
TikTok or Instagram?
Instagram.
Facebook or LinkedIn?
LinkedIn.
Favorite movie and what character would you play?
Favorite movie and what character would I play? I would have to think about this. It's been a long time since. When I was a kid, I used to love Braveheart. And of course I would be, I would be the main character. It's the first that comes to my mind. I know it's a very old movie. I'm sorry.
It's a great movie. It has one of the best speeches of all speeches in the world when he's on the horse riding the line.
Yes.
Best speech of all time.
Yes, indeed.
I've seen that movie a million times, especially that one scene. Big fan. Mm-hmm. Okay. Favorite book.
I can't say. I read for education. So I don't have a specific favorite book, like a novel.
Okay, no worries. Favorite sports team?
FC Barcelona.
As the new stadium opened, I was there. I walked around it. I couldn't go in because it was still under construction. Is it now?
They are doing construction. No. It's going to take a while, actually. They are moving to another stadium next year because they are going to, redo it all next year. So it's going to be a couple of years without being able to visit it. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, unfortunately.
I love watching football matches. I see them all over the world. So I've watched them in Barcelona, a few of the cities in Spain. I've been to watch the game in Seville. Mm-hmm. Sevilla. Is it Granada? Mm-hmm. Like, there's a few spots where I've been able to watch football matches, and it's been awesome. So big fan of catching them when I go to a city and travel. So
good.
Okay, a couple last questions. We're almost there. What is the meaning of success to you?
Be able to be happy.
I like it. Last question.
And it's very difficult. You have to set your objectives very, very carefully.
Set those objectives. I agree. Last question. What is your superpower?
My superpower? I think I'm the way I think. I think I'm very analytical, and I'm able to identify different paths and different scenarios, and I leverage this very well.
I second that. That was going to be what I thought as well. So I was going to match up to it, and I was going to share that, and you did it already. So brilliant. I will replicate that times two.
Thank you. Isn't this what you tell me on your podcasts? I'm gonna check it out.
Yes, I love it. Well, normally I throw out some other ideas, but I would say you also have a very keen sense of empathy towards people, and I think that also carries very well to your decision and your analytical skills, because you, in all the things that you shared, you always go back to the people. So you're always about protecting the people, protecting the founders, protecting the employees of your last business. So you have an empathy for those people. So that also carries well. So I think you're very well-rounded, and it's been a real pleasure to be able to have you on our show today. And I want to say, Jordy, it's been awesome. Took a lot of notes, a lot of great information shared. So I want to thank you again. And the way we like to end our show is, like, we like to give you the last word. So anything that you want to share to investors, to startups, I turn it over to you. But again, thank you very much for being on our show today.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Jeffrey. It has been my pleasure. I've had a lot of fun, frankly speaking. It has been a really good experience. And I mean, happy to be in your network, part of your community. It's very important. You know, hopefully we'll get to know some of the founders that are in the community, some of the investors, whoever that has interest in, you know, moving to Spain, investing in Spain, or founding a company in Spain, please reach me out. I'll be very happy to, you know, to connect.
I love it. Thank you for being a rock star. And the last question is, how do people get a hold of you?
I don't know.
I guess we can send them to LinkedIn, or if they want to meet you.
They can send me an email to, just connect me through LinkedIn is better. I think LinkedIn is the good channel.
All right, we can do that. All right, Jordy, thank you very much again for joining and sharing so much today. Congratulations on your second child. That's amazing. And you have a fantastic day.
Thank you very much. Have a good day, Jeffrey. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Okay, there was lots of stuff to reflect on there, but I really enjoyed the different side to coming in from the investor, also as the founder, but some of the takeaways on, you know, what it takes, but the curiosity, expertise, humbleness, open to explore, results oriented, ambitious, market first, transparent. A lot of key words that I guess you want to throw up on your wall, but things that, you know, founders and the like want to take a look at, and when they're building their company, try to keep them in mind, because they do make a big difference when you're growing your company. And on the ESG side, and as well on the impact side, you know, have a purpose. What are you trying to solve? Where are you trying to go? And utilizing your ESG is kind of your baseline, and then make sure that how you're building your company is impactful and changing the world in a good way. I think that is going to be key no matter what. So thank you for joining us today. If you enjoyed this conversation, please feel free to share it with your friends, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and or please follow us on Spotify, Apple, and or Stitcher. Feel free to share an audio or video clip around our show, and we may include it in one of our future podcasts. You can find or follow us at marketing@openpeoplenetwork or on LinkedIn at Supporters Fund. Your support and comments are truly appreciated. Please visit us at supportersfund.com or startup events at openpeoplenetwork.com. Thank you and have a fantastic day.